the fatal shooting of a Palestinian journalist by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin sparks widespread condemnations. Russia says it is closely watching the configuration of the Western military alliance, NATO, on Russian borders. Also ahead, a U.S. warship sailing through the sensitive Taiwan Strait draws a stern warning from the Chinese military. Welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israeli forces kill a reporter working for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera TV network in the occupied West Bank. Shireen Abu Akleh was fatally shot while covering an Israeli army raid on the city of Jenin. She was a veteran Palestinian reporter for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel. Israeli officials say the Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist. But another reporter accompanying Abu Akleh, who was shot in the back, calls the Israeli claim an outright lie.
The occupation is murderous and criminal. They shot us for no reason. We, a group of journalists, were there wearing our full press uniform in addition to the helmets with the word press written in large letters, as big as the whole world. We were obvious. We made sure to walk right in front of the army patrols so that they can see us, and they saw us after we went to a road where there were no armed people, no civilians, and there were no shooting and no incidents there. We were shocked by the shooting. I was lucky and I turned my back when the first bullet was shot and injured my back. They wanted to kill me. I was injured in my back and the second bullet shot my colleague Shireen and caused her death. There were no armed people and we cannot put our lives in danger and say the wrong narrative. The Israeli army is a liar and criminal and despicable.
Samoudi, who was shot in the back by Israeli troops, is now in stable condition. In the meantime, the Palestinian Health Ministry says a Palestinian teenager was also fatally shot in a separate Israeli attack in the West Bank city of Al Bira. Condemnations are pouring in over the killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh by Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh has slammed the killing. He says it shows the extent the Israeli regime can go to prevent the media from reporting the oppression of Palestinians. He has called on the world to investigate the issue and make sure that the regime is held accountable for its crime. A senior Qatari official called the killing state-sponsored Israeli terrorism, urging an end to unconditional support for Israel. An EU official demanded a swift and independent investigation to bring the perpetrators to justice.
We immediately called for a swift and independent investigation so that the perpetrators of this terrible crime can be brought to justice.
In the meantime, the Palestinian Authority says the murder is part of Israel's policy of targeting journalists to obscure the truth. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says Abu Akleh's killing lays bare the terroristic and violent nature of the occupying regime. Several media organizations and rights groups also condemned the killing and have called for investigations. Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, as well as people in several countries, including Tunisia, have taken to the streets to slam the killing. The Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting's World Service has condemned the Israeli killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. In a statement, IRIB's World Service hailed the journalist's bravery and described her killing as a crime which will be etched permanently on human memory. The statement also expressed support for all reporters across the globe who have not remained indifferent to atrocities and unacceptable behavior of the occupying regime in Palestine. It said such journalists will forever remain alive in the heart and memory of IRIB staff. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has destroyed the positions of terrorist groups operating in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. The IRGC's ground forces reportedly targeted the terrorist hideouts in the city of Erbil with artillery fire. There is no report of casualties and damage from the attack yet. The operation followed the arrest of a terrorist team planning to carry out sabotage attacks in western Iran. The statement says confessions made by detainees led to the operation on Wednesday morning. Iran has time and again warned Iraq's Kurdistan region that it reserves the right to hit terrorist groups operating in the region. In September of last year, Iranian missiles destroyed four bases of hostile groups, and in March of this year, the IRGC fired a dozen ballistic missiles at what it described as a secret base of the Israeli spy agency, Mossad, in Erbil. Iran's intelligence ministry reports the arrest of two European nationals who had entered the country with the aim of destabilizing and unleashing social chaos. The ministry says the detainees are experienced agents without specifying their nationalities. It says intelligence units were aware of their intention and had been monitoring their activities and meetings since their arrival to the country. According to the statement, the two detainees wanted to turn the people towards social unrest, making their demands from the government a pretext. The ministry underlined that they were, in particular, seeking to take advantage of Iranian teachers' demands. Russia says it is closely monitoring the configuration of the Western military alliance, NATO, on its borders. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov was reacting to a visit by the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson to Sweden and to Finland. The two Scandinavian neighbors of Russia are currently debating about their NATO membership. The Swedish parliament is set to meet on Monday to debate the matter further. Later this month, Stockholm and Helsinki are expected to announce their decisions on joining the alliance. The two have for decades maintained military non-alignment. Last month, Russia warned it would deploy nuclear weapons and missiles in the Baltic region if Sweden and Finland decide to join NATO. Russia is strongly opposed to the alliance's eastward expansion and views it as a security threat. Senior Russian officials say that Washington is waging a proxy war against Moscow after the U.S. House of Representatives approved billions of dollars in additional aid for Ukraine. The deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council has warned that the aid package would only cause the U.S. economy to suffer. Dmitry Medvedev says Americans are already paying the price through inflation over its Russophobic stance. Separately, Russia's parliament speaker accused Washington of using the aid to indebt Ukraine. On Tuesday, the U.S. House approved a bill to provide $40 billion in financial and military aid for Ukraine. Moscow has repeatedly warned that American and European money and weapons to Kyiv would worsen the situation further. We talked to former U.S. Army Psychological Warfare Officer Scott Bennett to get more on Washington's latest decision to provide Ukraine with extra financial and military aid.
I truly think they are beyond any rational, sane behavior. I think they are so pathologically delusional and wanting to believe their own lies that they engage in this silly lend-lease and exorbitant $40 billion sale of weapons that will only be destroyed the moment they hit the ground of Ukraine or are loaded onto a ship or transported. The Russians will annihilate every single weapon.
Russia's foreign minister says that his country has enough buyers for its energy outside of the Western world. This is the European Union intends to finalize a full embargo on Russian oil as soon as this week.
We have enough buyers of our energy resources and we will work with them. Let the West pay much more than it paid the Russian Federation and let it explain to its population why it should become poorer.
Lavrov made the remarks during a news conference in the Omani capital, Muscat. He also stressed that Moscow does not want a war in Europe. The EU is hoping to stop buying Russian crude within 6 months and refined products by the end of the year. The bloc, however, has not yet gained full support of member states. The Hungarian Prime Minister has compared EU's plans to an atomic bomb. Bulgaria has also threatened to veto the ban unless it gets derogation. Other countries like Slovakia and the Czech Republic are also demanding special dispensations to accommodate their domestic needs. Ukraine's ambassador to the bloc, however, says EU countries should be ready for, quote, economic sacrifices to stop Russia. China accuses Washington of yet another provocation as a U.S. warship sails through the sensitive Taiwan Strait. A statement by the Chinese military calls the U.S. action deliberate, adding that it harms peace and stability in the strategic waterway. The U.S. Navy claims, however, that its warship only conducted a routine transit in accordance with international law. This is the second such incident in 2 weeks. China considers the island as its territory and views U.S. military activities there as a sign of support for Taiwan. Washington has no diplomatic relations with Taiwan, but it is the island's key backer and main arms supplier. Political analyst Einar Tangen from Beijing says the U.S. is provoking China because it is afraid of losing its superiority.
Currently, it seems that the U.S. has it's one-trick pony. It's continually trying to press issues. There's this desire for regime change, not only in China, but also obviously in Iran, Venezuela, you name it, and Russia itself. So this kind of ongoing pressure campaign, provocations, trying to get something to happen, and then trying to use proxies as a means of having any kind of conflict, not a direct conflict, but a proxy conflict. And this has been pretty much the game plan for the last few years. Biden does not seem to have any kind of master strategy that goes beyond it. The danger is that there is no clear exit strategy or end game. The U.S. Is poking all opponents in all places, basically because it doesn't believe that anybody should have a regime that is not similar to the U.S. one, and quite frankly, inferior. They don't want anybody to challenge them.
The new South Korean president has made an offer to the North which he believes may defuse tensions on the Korean Peninsula: economic incentives in return for denuclearization. This approach, however, is nothing new and has not materialized in the past. So why would he think that this would work with a North Korean leader who has repeatedly called nuclear weapons part of his country's deterrence?
Yoon Suk-yeol has been sworn in as South Korea's new president. Yoon is a former prosecutor and won the election in March by the slimmest of margins. During his inaugural ceremony, he called for the complete denuclearization of North Korea, saying Pyongyang's weapons program poses a threat to global security. He said Seoul is ready to provide an audacious economic plan if the North commits to nuclear disarmament. If North Korea genuinely embarks on a process to complete denuclearization, we're prepared to work with the international community to present an audacious plan that will vastly strengthen North Korea's economy and improve the lives of its people.
While North Korea's nuclear weapons program are a threat not only to our region, while North Korea's nuclear weapons program are a threat not only to our security and that of the North Asia region, the door to dialogue will remain open so that we can peacefully resolve this threat.
And to think that is it possible to dismantle this deterrent program just with the promise that in the speech was made, the promise to commit a very strong economic plan if North Korea commits with his disarmament, I think it is a little bit unrealistic, this kind of request.
The new president has suggested a tougher line on North Korea, warning of a preemptive strike in the event of an attack and vowing to strengthen his country's deterrent capability. He has favored stronger ties with the U.S. and adopted a rigid stance toward North Korea. Experts believe Seoul's policy toward Pyongyang will take a turn from rapprochement to more tensions. Yoon has not provided any details as to whether he plans to re-engage or provide economic incentives to the North. But officials in his national security team have said his government would devise a roadmap in the early days in which Pyongyang could quickly earn sanctions relief or economic aid in exchange for denuclearization measures.
Labour Party leader Sir Keir Starmer has pledged to step down if he is fined for potentially breaching COVID lockdown rules. Starmer and several members of his senior team are being investigated by Durham police after reports emerged that he had enjoyed a curry and drinks whilst assisting with a by-election campaign in the area. Labour officials have denied any breaches but must await the results of an investigation.
To tackle the immediate crisis.
Opposition leader Sir Keir Starmer has been at the front of the chorus urging Prime Minister Boris Johnson to do the decent thing and step down, after being fined for his part in a series of lockdown gatherings dubbed Partygate. Now the Labour leader has become embroiled in a controversy of his own, nicknamed Currygate, after being pictured enjoying a meal and a drink in what the party's calling a work event, but one being dubbed an illegal gathering by his opponents.
First and foremost, no rules were broken. I don't actually believe that those that are accusing me believe rules were broken. They are trying to simply drag all politicians into a place where the public think we're all the same. For me, this is an in-principle position. No rules are broken. I'm absolutely clear about that. But in the event that I'm wrong about that and I get a fixed penalty notice, I will do the right thing and step down.
Political observers think this is a risky strategy.
Well, I think that his advisers think this is a really good ploy to contrast him with Boris Johnson, who, of course, didn't resign, having been fined for breaking the lockdown regulations. But it's a dangerous ploy as well, because he's not in control of what the police investigation is going to find. And if he does get fined, he's now been committed to resigning as leadership of the Labour Party.
The Labour Party had desperately wanted to take the moral high ground when it came to their handling of COVID rules and regulations. Not just in the House of Commons, but in the court of public opinion. But now with their leader caught in the spotlight because of his own missteps, supporters of Boris Johnson are hoping to capitalise on this political mistake and make Labour pay. Whether or not the leader of the Labour Party is fined, for many of the electorate, this is yet another letdown. Politicians who seemingly are unwilling or unable to play by the rules. The police investigation could take as long as a month to conclude. Now Labour and its leader must play the waiting game and cross their political fingers that this high-stake gamble has paid off. Mina Taylor, London.
The Russian president has called on officials to do more to tackle deadly forest fires raging in Siberia. In a virtual meeting with regional officials, Vladimir Putin warned that there should be no repeat of last year's fires, which were the biggest on record for the country. He said the blazes threatened both the people and the economy. The fires that erupted last week have claimed 8 lives so far and destroyed hundreds of buildings. High winds have hampered efforts to put out the blazes. Scientists believe soaring temperatures in Siberia as a result of climate change is the main reason for widespread blazes. Some 4,000 wildfires were reported in Russia this year alone. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
32.
Tuman.
Yani?
32.
Bazaar. Catalysts are the unsung heroes of the chemical reactions that make human society tick by. They help speed up chemical processes between molecules that might have been taken years to interact. Factories rely on catalysts to make everything from plastic to drugs. Catalysts also help process petroleum and coal into liquid fuels and are key players in clean energy technologies as well. However, their biggest use happens in the oil and gas industries. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In case you haven't already guessed it, this week we're going to explore the expansive world of catalysts. We wanted to see who the major players in this field are and some of the applications of catalysts. Now we will uncover how these tiny but mighty substances have made massive contributions to the national economy. It's going to be a fun one, so let's start the show. To familiarize ourselves with what catalysts are and where they are used, we visited a company specializing in making these items. Sarv Gas and Oil Company is a knowledge-based firm that has been active in this field for nearly two decades. This company makes a wide range of catalysts in 30 different types. Among its products, one can name catalysts used for the synthesis of formaldehyde, which is handy in the production of methanol. But that's not all. The products made here are extensively used to make raw materials with applications in numerous other production industries. Among its numerous achievements, this company has also obtained the know-how for making machinery and equipment necessary to complete various catalyst production chains. And that's not an easy task. A lot of hard work and science goes into making catalysts. That is why not all catalysts are created equal. Some are made with lower quality depending on the means and production methods, because catalysts are used to make other items through chemical processes. Having good quality catalyst is crucial in making high quality final products. This company serves two major roles: high-quality catalyst production and product development. As a knowledge-based company, the research and development department holds the pulse of these activities. It has dedicated much of its resources to furnishing its department with the latest technology to get the job done. Knowledgeable experts run its research and development department. Among its staff, this company employs engineers, scientists, researchers, and a whole host of other experts. Over the years, it has created hundreds of direct job opportunities as well. This company has overcome numerous obstacles to enjoy its many hard-earned achievements. One such challenge has been the U.S.-imposed sanctions. Some time ago, catalysts were placed on the U.S. sanctions list, so this company stepped up to the plate to fill in the market void, turning a challenge into an opportunity. With nearly 20 years of experience under its belt, this company has gained significant ground in the market. It is also known for being one of the first businesses to export catalysts. As part of its future vision, it wants to manufacture machines and catalysts that will complete various domestic chain productions. Additionally, it strives to make Iran self-sufficient in the field of catalysts. Catalysts
Catalysts are broadly used to make metals. Powerhouse industries like Iran's steel and iron sectors rely heavily on catalysts for their outputs. Products from these industries are vital to downstream manufacturing sectors such as construction materials, cables, home appliances, and automobiles, just to name a few. All of these sectors are part of the process of adding value to materials that generate higher profits as well. Companies like the one we just mentioned play a big role in providing catalyst to the steel and iron industry. Based on figures from the World Steel Association, Iran is the world's 10th biggest steel producer. Last year, crude steel production stood at 27 million tons. That's in contrast to the year 2019, when the country produced over 30 million tons. But despite the apparent decline, Iran's world standing remains unchanged. Meanwhile, the government has implemented several plans to increase production in this key sector over the years. Industry participants expect Iran to climb to 7th place among global top steel producers by 2024. There are 30 active steel producers in the country with high production capacities. These companies receive most of the iron they need through domestic sponge iron producers. It might be interesting to know that Iran is the biggest producer of sponge iron in the West Asian region. That's going off of a recent report by the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries and Renovation Organization. The report also says Iran is globally ranked second in its productions, closely rivaling India at the top. Figures show that in 2020, domestic sponge iron production stood at 30 million tons, while India's was around 33 million. As we mentioned earlier in the program, catalysts are necessary to make numerous items. That is why they are considered a strategic product. And in Iran, these pocket rockets play a significant role in the country's oil and petrochemical industry. Remarkably, without catalysts, Iran's thriving oil and gas industries would not thrive as they are today. According to figures from the Oil Ministry, the country exported petrochemical and petroleum products worth around $20 billion in 2020. That is twice the value of Iran's crude exports. While most of the world's last refinery output during the coronavirus pandemic, Iranian gasoline exports rose in the year 2020. Going off of figures from the National Oil, Gas, and Petrochemical Products Exporters Union, exports hovered at 8 million tons that year. These gasoline exports generated an estimated $3 billion. Iran's oil and gas industry is still going strong, and there are many investment opportunities in this sector and its downstream industries. Aluminum is the third most abundant metal found on Earth's crust. It is used everywhere, from space capsules to soda cans, but that hasn't always been the case. Surprisingly, aluminum used to be more expensive than gold. In fact, it was so precious that Napoleon used aluminum utensils while dining with guests as a gesture of wealth. Before the 19th century, making aluminum was both expensive and difficult. The new methods for isolating alumina to make the metal were discovered involving electrochemistry. These days, alumina is still continuously studied owing to its vast number of industrial and technological applications. This week, we will talk about the vast world of alumina production, its various uses and markets. Plus, we will uncover how this seemingly simple item has made broad contributions to knowledge-based product development and the economy as a whole. So let's get started. To become more familiar with alumina and its related products, we visited Altus Alumina. It is a company that specializes in making fused alumina oxide.
Now you might be wondering where fused alumina is used. Alumina has a very high melting point and is a crystal-type powder used in grinding, blasting, and cutting processes. Plus, it is an ingredient in various formulations to make things like fire-retardant glass and ceramic glaze. Fused alumina is also used to make various types of catalyst as well. Alumina doesn't quite naturally exist in nature. It is actually synthetically produced, which is no easy task. However, bauxite, which is the raw material alumina comes from, can be found in abundance in the country's mineral reserves. Bauxite ore is extracted from mines. Then it undergoes a refining process that includes digesting it in piping hot sodium hydroxide, where it's also electrocuted. Then it is filtered and fed to a rotary furnace where it dries at super high temperatures until it becomes a fine crystalline substance. The production facilities of this company are located in Khorasan-e-Razavi province. It is conveniently close to one of the largest bauxite mines in the country where it gets the majority of its raw material. It might be interesting to know that a lot of the equipment and technology used to make alumina in the country have all been domestically produced. That is significant because this machinery was previously imported through difficult custom processes, which were often time-consuming and, more importantly, very expensive. So indigenizing technology used in knowledge-based industries to produce value-added products is key to expanding the size of related markets. The beating heart of this company is its massive and high-tech research and development department. This knowledge-based company has obtained the technical know-how of producing various grades of alumina. This department carries out studies on the structural, physical, and chemical properties of alumina oxide and improve its performance for different uses. Customers can also make special requests depending on the product they want to make. The research and development department then creates the optimal formula of fused alumina to suit the customer's needs. On another note, while fused alumina is produced in small quantities by other companies, the quality of these productions is often fairly low. This has led industry participants to look to imports to meet their needs. However, this company has saved the country millions in imports while matching international standards for product quality. Presently, this knowledge-based firm is standing on the cusp of exporting its products. It hopes to gain a high share of foreign markets to meet regional demands. This is easily possible as fused alumina is not abundantly produced in the West Asian region and is typically imported into the area. As part of its future vision, this company wants to expand this particular industry to produce high-quality products. It also wants to introduce new items that can be used in down-the-line industries. From laminates and paints to concrete, cement, and tiles, alumina is an important ingredient in numerous products. Iran is a leading producer of many of these items that it also exports to neighboring regions. But alumina is mainly used to make the metal we are all familiar with, which is aluminum. And Iran's market is thriving with aluminum ingot production skyrocketing in recent years. Official figures show Iran is among the top 15 producers of aluminum in the world. Last year, Iran produced over 400,000 tons of aluminum ingots, which is roughly 55,000 tons more than the year before. That is based on figures from the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization, also known by the acronym IMIDRO. Going off the figures from IMIDRO, the total production of aluminum has roughly doubled over the past 2 years. This comes as aluminum bauxite production surged by well over 13% in the same period. Last year, around 1 million tons of bauxite were produced. Meanwhile, the government is planning on increasing annual aluminum production to 1.5 million tons by the year 2026. This means that alumina production must also increase accordingly. So, how many bauxite reserves are there in the country? Iran has one major bauxite mine, which is located in North Khorasan province. Jojarao mine has an estimated total of 30 million tons of reserves, but only 7 million tons of it are proven reserves. This mine is owned by Iran's sole alumina producing company, which is also owned by Imidro. So far, this company has explored and owned nearly 20 bauxite zones in various areas nationwide. But these zones are primarily used as extra feed for the Jojarao alumina refinery. Iran is well known for its copious mineral reserves. In fact, the country has over 60 billion tons of mineral reserves, of which some 40 billion tons are proven reserves. That is based on figures from the National Geological Survey and Mineral Exploration Agency. The Ministry of Mining says the productions in this sector are worth some $22 billion. But so far, productions haven't met this potential value. Industry participants say the country is not using all of its mining potentials. There are several reasons for this. One is the need to further develop the technology and research necessary to expand this sector. Areas that need more attention are geological exploration to discover new reserves and calculating mineable reserves. Plus, there are lucrative investment opportunities for engineering extraction and refining equipment. But that's not all. Once the results are in, related bodies with the know-how to conduct necessary material research are also needed to develop products. And here is where knowledge-based companies, such as the one we just mentioned, play a big role in the mining sector. Presently, there are well over 7,000 knowledge-based companies in Iran. One of this amount, nearly 900 of them, are active in the field of advanced materials and products that are based on chemical technologies. In its transition to a knowledge-based economy, the government has stepped up its support for knowledge-based firms and research institutions. Through the Science and Technology Office and the National Innovation Fund, the government has provided provisions that encourage activities in the mining field. Despite Iran being the third most sanctioned country by the United States, it has made major gains in its industrial developments and added value productions. Such efforts have led to self-sufficiency in many sectors.
All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there on the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
Today, we are visiting a company that matches buyers of agricultural products to farmers and removes the middlemen. Therefore, products will be delivered directly to customers from farm to table. And that's not the only thing they are doing here. Let's find out more.
Okay, now I'm just looking at the website that this company has. They've done something very important, and that is gathering, you know, farmers from all around Iran and then finding what sort of product each farmer is growing in his farm and then matching these farmers to buyers. For example, just look here, they've got different sorts of, for example, sesame from different producers in different cities. And why is this important? See, they've got a variety of products. Iran is a four-season country. It means that all around the year, there are certain products that are grown in different parts of the country. So when we do not have, for example, watermelons in one part of the country, the other part is producing them. So whenever a buyer wants to purchase watermelons, for instance, he can just simply find it here. And this is amazing. In addition to their website, this company also has an application, which is named Cafe Mife. You can order fruit and vegetables that are fresh and handpicked for your parties or ceremonies. And you see, here in this company, they have a special section that they pack these fruit, they sort them out first, and based on their quality, they pack them like this, and then they will send them directly to your houses. So let's go to that section and find out how they do it. In this line, they pack the products. Okay, Fruit and vegetables that are fresh come here, and then they handpick them and categorize them into three groups: grade 1, grade 2, and grade 3. Grade 1 is the one that has the highest quality and apparently looks better. It also has the highest price. Then customers go to the application and choose which one of these products they want. And then they just sort them and pack them like these and quickly send them to your house. From farm to table is a phrase you might all have heard. This means that buyers can directly purchase their products, which is fresh fruit and vegetables, directly from farmers. And this is exactly what this company is doing by cutting out brokers. Thank you.
There is so much more to say about this industry and its related trades. So without further ado, let's dive right into some news and trends in this field. As mentioned throughout the program, catalysts are important in boosting production in a whole host of industries. Now, Iranian experts have succeeded in domestically producing two types of catalysts used in the petrochemical sector. It's a major achievement as the petrochemical industry makes 35 million tons of final products for downstream sectors and exports annually. The National Petrochemical Company says out of 85 types of catalyst used in this industry, 22 of them are domestically made. Much of Iran's development and expansion of the oil sector is largely owed to its knowledgeable engineers. Such services are also being exported beyond the country's borders. Earlier this year, Iran entered an agreement with Romania to export technical services to the country's gas sector. Based on the agreement, Iran would provide engineering services to construct gas transmission lines, storage tanks, and other necessary facilities in Romania. Plus, the arrangement seeks to explore joint investment opportunities in various fields, such as the feasibility of building refineries and power plants. One of the trends we are seeing in the oil and gas sector is the government's determination to expand its developments. One path to achieving this goal is to increase collaboration with knowledge and research-based companies and academic institutions. The plan for using domestic capacities for innovation in the oil industry has been put at the top of the agenda for years. One example is the massive Memorandum of Understanding, or MOU, signed between the Iranian Oil Innovation and Technology Park with knowledge-based companies. This agreement covers a variety of areas, such as providing capital, developing artificial intelligence, and so much more. With that, we are fresh out of time. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next time for another edition of Bazaar.
In the limelight.
According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, COVID-19 has become the third leading cause of death in the United States after heart disease and cancer. Amid all of this pain, President Joe Biden has dropped most pandemic restrictions, stopped most national tracking, and failed to act on even the most basic federal actions to rein this pandemic in. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Analia Mejia Ryder. This article is published under the heading, "As U.S. marks 1 million COVID deaths, Biden has dropped most pandemic protections." Here's more. 1 million deaths, an unthinkable milestone when this pandemic started. And even this gruesome number doesn't capture who and what the U.S. has lost. 1 million lives lost, dreams unfulfilled, families heartbroken, and futures cut short. This loss is unimaginable, and the Americans have only just begun to scratch the surface of how their communities will continue to grapple with this mass death and violence, surely for generations to come. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, COVID-19 has become the third leading cause of death in the United States after heart disease and cancer. Amid all of this pain, President Joe Biden has dropped most pandemic restrictions, stopped most national tracking, and failed to act on even the most basic federal actions to rein this pandemic in. Disabled and chronically ill Americans have been left adrift. In a maskless world, many of people in the U.S. are unable to safely leave their homes. They need swift, immediate action at a global level. Fighting this pandemic as if they can defeat it alone has failed. It's time. Biden must work with Congress immediately to ensure that supplemental COVID funding includes significant global investments to end the pandemic. Americans' lives are at stake, and Americans cannot wait another moment. Heading into third year of the pandemic, billions worldwide still don't have access to COVID vaccines and treatments, continuing to suffer even as pharmaceutical companies reach record profits. Globally, less wealthy nations have been abandoned to vaccine apartheid as pharmaceutical companies are selling and distributing vaccines, tests, and treatments almost exclusively to wealthy nations. In the U.S., it's communities of color, low-income people, and the disabled who face the greatest burden of COVID-19 in terms of death rates, but also economically and socially. Those working in lower-wage fields like food and agriculture, warehouse operations, transportation, and construction saw higher rates of death than in most other occupations. Working in a nursing home has become one of the deadliest jobs in the U.S. The consequences of this pandemic are far-reaching and devastating, not just for those Americans have lost, but for the ones they have left behind. They have the tools and resources necessary to support their communities and fight health inequity right now, but it's clear that what is missing is the political will to do so. The United States hasn't seen mass death on a scale like this since the Second World War, when about 418,000 Americans died. The Atlantic's Ed Young puts it into perspective. Quote, the U.S. reported more deaths from COVID-19 last Friday on March 4th than deaths from Hurricane Katrina, more on any two recent weekdays than deaths during the 9/11 terrorist attacks, more last month than deaths from flu in a bad season, and more in 2 years than deaths from HIV during the 4 decades of AIDS epidemic, unquote. Varies the U.S. great reckoning of this mass violence and pain, and more importantly, where is the political will to fight the future for the families, for a road ahead away from this destruction and toward justice, equality, health, and resources for all those still suffering and at risk of death. since it rejected a $15 billion supplemental for pandemic preparedness that included global vaccine outreach and funding for free vaccines and testing in the U.S., Congress has not provided Americans with the funding they need to continue a robust COVID response, even amid new variants and continued pandemic-related economic stress. With cases rising abroad, experts are sounding the alarm that Americans should expect a rise in cases in the U.S. as well. Failure to adequately fund these efforts now will have severe and far-reaching consequences, impacting the ability to deal with a future surge. Moreover, despite widespread messaging that COVID testing is free, many patients have found themselves facing bills for testing, some for over $1,000. According to the New York Times, about 2.4% of coronavirus tests billed to insurers in 2020 left the patient responsible for some portion of payment, adding up to hundreds of thousands of Americans who received unexpected bills. Patients were left with these high bills due to gaps in protections that Congress and the Trump administration put in place early in the pandemic. And the American communities are still suffering. While ensuring that people trust the vaccine is a high priority, it is also critical that unexpected costs for testing and treatment don't deter individuals from getting vaccinated. Democrats must pass supplemental funding without giving in to Republican demands to tie COVID funds to oppressive immigration policies. They cannot allow partisan distractions and anti-immigrant cruelty to distract from this urgent need. The time to act is now, and Americans cannot leave anyone behind. A new way of life is there, seemingly forever. But adjusting to the new normal is hardly enough, not when an average of 26,000 new cases are recorded every single day, bringing with them the threat of more death, more loss, more futures taken too soon. Mask mandates are being lifted across the U.S. There is no national funding to support those infected. Uninsured Americans have little to no support.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.